Good evening. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. I am a veteran advocate and attorney at the Veterans Law Group. We've been working on VA disability claims for a little over 25 years. We are live here this evening. One of the joys of my job is I get to spend most Tuesday evenings with you all talking about a subject that is very near and dear to my heart, helping veterans walk through and get successful claims through the VA for their disability compensation. We have relatively big news tonight. If you have not heard yet, the Senate just recently passed the PACT Act, what is called the PACT Act, which is going to open up the floodgates as far as benefits that are available to veterans that were not getting those benefits before. So we're going to dig into that a little bit this evening. As always, when we're live, I love to take your calls to answer questions about your particular claim or a family member's claim. So even though I'm going to be focused a little bit on the PACT Act, please don't take that as not a green light to be able to pick up the phone and call me to help out with your particular claim, even if it's not related to that. Our number here is 800-222-5222. Again, we'd be happy to take your calls if you're a veteran or you've just got some questions about how you can help maybe a family member in your life or a friend in your life. That is how I got involved in doing VA disability. I had been a business attorney for years, running my own practice, and had a good friend of mine who was, you know, getting out of the military and was struggling with PTSD and just had a hard time with making that transition and holding down a job, as many veterans who are dealing with PTSD, or even he had some orthopedic stuff as well, which was affecting his ability, limiting his type of jobs he could work. He tried to go to school, all that kind of thing. So I definitely know what it's like to have somebody in your life that is, you know, a friend or family or somebody that you care about, and the frustration of walking them or watching them try to navigate the red tape and the bureaucracy and all of that. It became extremely frustrating to me, and so I jumped in, and here we are, gosh, 10, 11 years later, and this is all I do now, is help veterans every day with their disability benefits claims, and specifically we work in the appeals arena, so those are cases in which you've received a decision, but you're unhappy with it for some reason. So maybe you were denied, maybe you were underrated. You know, it can be relatively frustrating to get back a 10% when you're struggling on a day-to-day basis with dealing with whatever injury that you had while you were in service. So again, we're taking your calls live this evening at 800-222-5222. I am going to dig in a little bit on this PACT Act. I won't get too legalese on you. I did spend a little bit of time scanning through a 128-page long PDF this afternoon. I definitely had some education on it before. In fact, a few weeks ago, we did talk a little bit about it. So if you want to go back, I'm just going to dig in a little bit more, because now that we know that it's passed, as is expected to be signed by Biden, and the VA has already pretty much started to educate and is open to receiving claims. So let's just give the big picture here. It effectively, I indicated it's expected to affect 1 in 5 veterans in the country. The big things are, let's start with Vietnam era veterans. If you were a veteran during the Vietnam era, and maybe did not serve specifically in Vietnam, but maybe one of these other bases that had a lot of restrictions, such as Thailand, Guam, American Samoa, Cambodia, Laos. Two things happened with Agent Orange. One, in general, anybody who had an exposure to Agent Orange, they added 2 new presumptives. So what that means is, if you were in an area that they have acknowledged had Agent Orange exposure during a time that it was there, and you sometime in life end up with a particular condition, that's what they call a presumptive, and they're going to say, okay, we're just going to presume that your Parkinson's is related to your Agent Orange exposure. So there's a whole list of these. Those of you who were from that era probably pretty familiar with them. They periodically do add new conditions to that. So they added 2 new conditions, including hypertension, which I know a lot of people were really looking for and expecting that. It's been a few years we were expecting that to come through. So at that point, if you served in Vietnam, had Agent Orange exposure, they're going to presume that you do. You at some point in your life develop a condition that's presumptive. They will presume it's related to the Agent Orange, so they will service connect it. And then the question after that is what percentage are they going to rate you? So even though there is a presumptive with it, it doesn't mean that the work is over at that point, because a lot of times veterans end up getting underrated on those things. So there's a couple things that got added there. The big one that I see that I've got a handful of clients that this is going to affect immediately is in those bases where so it used to be that if you served in Thailand and you served between 62 and 76, you had to show that you were on one of the listed military bases or the U.S. or Royal Thai military bases. And then on top of that, you had to show and give some sort of evidence that your job responsibilities required you to be on the perimeter of the bases, which was always a little bit just, you know, sarcastically eye rolling to me, because, you know, they were basically claiming, well, there was an Agent Orange on the base, but around the base and the outside of it. So therefore, if you were along the fence line or that kind of thing, you might have then got exposed to that. And just from a common sense, practical aspect, that just, you know, makes me laugh. But I have to try to keep a sense of humor about my job, because it can get extremely frustrating and stressful. And, you know, I'll often say that nothing surprises me from the VA anymore. Every once in a while, they do get me, but there is some really bizarre, ridiculous stuff that comes out of the VA sometimes. So back to the point, again, we're live here this evening, so if you want to chime in on this conversation or you've got a question about your claim, I'm happy to table this conversation, answer your question, and then jump back into it. But under the new law, under the PACT Act, if you served in Thailand from January 9th, 1962 through June 30th of 1976, you were on any U.S. or Royal Thai military base, they will presume that you had exposure to Agent Orange. So you no longer have to jump through those additional hoops. That, like I said, right now, I've got at least 5 pending cases just off the top of my head that I know that's going to fix that case. And it's going, if we've had it on appeal, one in particular we've had on appeal for years, and it's gone back and forth and we've just kept it alive. So it's going to ultimately be, it was really good news to be able to shoot an email to that veteran today and say, hey, did you see they passed it? So it's going to affect him. In Laos, from December 1st, 1965 through September 1969. So that opens up, and again, you don't have to prove what you did. Cambodia, it opens up 69, kind of a small little stint there. Guam or American Samoa, in January 9th, 1962 through July 30th, 1980. And that includes in the territorial waters off of Guam or American Samoa. And then Johnson Atoll, or on a ship that was called that, from 1972 through September 1977. So that's opens up a lot of things there. And then there's a few other things. So that's Vietnam era veterans. And then the biggest part of it that you will hear, but I just don't want the changes to the Vietnam era veteran to get overshadowed by what you're going to see in the media and what is the kind of crowning achievement in this, is that it's going to open up for helping the veterans that during post 9/11 Gulf War era that were exposed to burn pits. There is an entire list of cancers and conditions, digestive conditions. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I would be happy to answer questions if you have them, where they are going to do the same thing that they did with Agent Orange. If you served in the Gulf era during post 9/11 and you were, and they list all of the countries and what particular countries, I'll pull that up here in a minute. They're going to presume that you had some exposure to burn pits. And so therefore, if you end up with any sort of, there's many different types of cancers that are associated with that, that you would automatically, they would automatically service connect that and say that it was because of your service. So again, we're live here this evening. We're talking about the PACT Act that passed today. Our number here is 800-222-5222. Happy to take your calls. Let's pull up, before we go to break here, let's pull up the list of countries that are affected. Well, before I go into that, because I may not have time before we go to the break, I do want to talk about maybe the implications of, it's one of those things of if you hear me talk at all on this show, I try to curb my cynicism about the VA as much as possible. But as you can imagine, if I am handling VA appeals case, the majority of the people who are coming to us and coming to, and asking us for help are people who are not happy with the decision that they got. So I recognize the fact that if a veteran is happy with their decision, I probably won't talk to them as they're not calling our office asking for help. So I know that there are times when the VA gets it right, but anytime stuff like this happens, immediately am thinking, okay, we all expected this to happen. What is the VA, what have they been doing to kind of ramp up? Because as you can imagine, there's going to be a huge influx of claims being filed if we're talking about this potentially affecting, 4 million veterans in the country. And if you think right now, there's currently, let's see, I'm looking at the numbers here, there are currently pending in appeals 204,000 appeals. And that is at the board. So let's see if I can get a whole number real quickly. But just to give you an idea that those are current appeals. So if you can imagine with this affecting 4 million people, potentially 4 million people, say only 50% of them end up filing a claim, that is a huge influx of claims into the VA and how they're going to manage that and help that, and how many of those, because they weren't properly handled when they go through the initial claims process, how many of them are going to add to that 200,000 in appeals? And so I just see, I saw it when they did some Agent Orange changes, when there was just a few of them, we saw a huge influx, and now this is just going to be huge. So it's going to be interesting to see how the VA handles that and how they manage that with all of the additional changes that they have going on already. So when we get back, I'm going to touch base on the some of the conditions that are service connected and also the countries. So we're talking about the PACT Act that passed today, passed the Senate, it's expected to be signed. You're listening to Amanda Manier with here on 790 KABC. This is the Veterans Voice. We'll be right back. Good evening. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier here on the Veterans Voice. We are talking about VA disability claims and the things that are currently going on in our country under the Senate just passed the PACT Act, which is going to, in my perspective, going to open the floodgates as to claims that need to be filed, claims that need to be processed, veterans that need to be taken care of. Should have happened a long time ago. I think the last I saw it was 13 years in the making. That some people have been fighting for it, and even at the last minute when they didn't pass it last week, and there's a little bit of hubbub about that. It has always been expected to pass once it reached this far, but of course, Congress has to play a little bit of politics and get certain things that they want. But it is officially passed now, and it's going to cause a huge influx of just changes that need to be implemented by the VA. And my job as an attorney and helping veterans with and their families with this process is what's the best way that I can advocate and I can teach my team to advocate with before the VA for the veterans so they can get what they need to. The passing of the law is the first step in the process. Now it's what is the VA going to do with it? How are they going to process these claims? And then what is our responsibility, mine and my team's responsibility for making sure that the veteran is getting what that they are entitled to? So we were talking before the break. We are taking your calls live this evening. If you'd like to join us for this conversation on the PACT Act, or if you have something unrelated, a case unrelated that you would like me to answer questions on, give you some advice, point you in the right direction. My goal is always to get the veteran the maximum benefit they can with the earliest effective date. And how we do that can be, all kinds of strategy and how we do that. So I not try to look at things not only purely from the letter of the law and what the VA should be doing based upon the letter of the law, but how do you actually get that to be implemented in a proper way? So as a representative, my job is to make sure that it's easy for the VA to give you what you're entitled to. Again, we're live here this evening, 800-222-5222. Before we went to the break, we were talking just kind of big picture a little bit about which Vietnam veterans are going to be affected, Vietnam era. So even if you didn't serve in Vietnam, if you were in Thailand or some of those other countries that we just talked about, you no longer have to additionally prove that you were on certain bases during certain times or additionally prove that you had a, you know, your job responsibilities included you being on the perimeter. So big difference. I think it's probably just as big as a couple years ago when they changed the definition of the Republic of Vietnam to you didn't have to be blue water or brown water veterans or boots on the ground. It's as long as you were within the territorial area, the 12-mile radius outside of Vietnam, that they would presume that you had been exposed to Agent Orange. On the rest of it that you're going to hear a lot more about, specifically with the buzzword, the big term right now is this, the burn pits, rightfully so, because it's been ignored for so many years. And I've talked about it for years. This burn pits is going to be the next Agent Orange. And that's exactly what this PACT Act does, is it takes a list of countries and dates, and then it takes a list of presumed illnesses, and it says if you served in these countries during this time, we're going to presume that you had an exposure to a burn pit, and those burn pits now we're acknowledging could potentially cause a whole bunch of illnesses. So if you have that illness, you don't have to prove that the illness is directly associated with the burn pits. They're going to make that presumption. So up until now, the only way you would get one of these things service connected is if it's specifically in your case, you had a medical opinion that said, in your case, the doctor believed that your cancer was related to your time in service. So it does make things a little bit easier. Doesn't mean that those cases still won't end up in my office on appeal, because things do get denied that shouldn't get denied, and things also, like records, are not necessarily always accurate. And there's, in addition to that, you may get the service connection, but then you end up getting underrated. So let's talk a little bit about, let's see, if you served, so the burn pits here, if you served on or after August 2nd, 1990, and it doesn't matter what branch of service you were in, but you were in Bahrain, Iraq, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, or the United Arab Emirates, they're going to presume that you had exposure to burn pits. If you served on or after September 11th, 2001, again, any branch of service, and you were in Afghanistan, Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, Uzbekistan, the Philippines, or any other country determined relevant by the secretary. So that last catch-all is it. This bill provides the opportunity for the secretary of the VA to add presumptives and add countries as we go forward, because as you see, there isn't an end date to it. It's just on or after September 11th. So this may go on for years. And so these countries, maybe there could be more countries that are added to it as we go forward, or also in retrospect that maybe the legislation missed that. So those are the countries. A lot of them, like I said, it's estimated to affect about 4 million veterans. So it's like I said, going to be a big deal. And then the list of conditions. So I'm not going to necessarily read all of them because there are a lot. But I will, you can find it on the VA website if you want to read their version of it. If you just search PACT Act and you go to the link that is va.gov, looks like it's va.gov, resources, the PACT Act, and your VA benefits. So it's going to list all of those there. But I'll just give you some of the highlights. Asthma is one, and then pretty much a list of cancers: head, neck, respiratory, gastrointestinal, reproductive, lymphoma, kidney, brain cancer, melanoma, pancreatic cancer. So there's a whole list of them. Then it gets into some, breathing, chronic bronchitis, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, emphysema. So there's a lot of sinusitis, retinitis, a lot of those that I know many of the cases that we've worked on, we had to really dig in to get a medical opinion that would tie these conditions to the exposure for burn pits, and it was, you know, regularly an uphill battle. So it's definitely going to change a lot of things. So that's what we've got going on right now. As far as when it gets signed and when it gets implemented, I'll tell you specifically like what the VA is already saying. Like one of the questions is, how do I file for a claim? Should I file now? And they specifically say, yeah, that they are considering all these presumptive conditions established as of the date of the enactment. So it's going to be the date that Biden signs it. So you can go ahead and claim now. The one thing I will give you caution on, anytime the VA does these kind of changes, one of the things they tell you is, if you previously filed the claim, we will reach out to you. If we denied your claim, this is what it says. If we denied your claim in the past and you think you may be eligible now, we'll try to contact you. But the rest of the story is, there's no reason for you to wait for them to contact you. I know that with the change to the Blue Water Veterans, it took several years for the VA, or a couple years for the VA, to start reaching out to veterans. So if you kind of wait for that, you're basically expecting the VA to, one, recognize that you had filed a claim for it before, so find your claim and all of the claims out there, reach out to you, get you scheduled. My recommendation is just take the role, take the responsibility, get it filed, work with a veteran service officer or somebody. We don't file initial claims, but if you work with a veteran service officer, you file a claim, and you either get denied or you get underrated, that's when you can reach out to our office. So if you have previously filed for something like this and they had denied it, you need to file it on a supplemental claim. You don't want to do that just initial claim 526 form. You need to do it as a supplemental, and they will then start processing those claims. We'll see what happens. I would say get in earlier rather than later, because we'll see what happens as the influx of claims gets filed with the VA. And, you know, they're eventually going to get backlogged on all of these. It's just the way that the VA always works. Shifting resources, they get, you know, I'm sure that they have been preparing for this because it has been expected to pass for a while. But how they implement that and how that's going to change anything, I would say get your claim in sooner rather than later. If you meet any of these requirements, or you think that you might, definitely get the claim in. So we are live here this evening. You're listening to Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We're talking about VA disability benefits every Tuesday night here on 790 KABC. If you would like to give us a call to talk about what the least recent legislation, or if you have a question on your claim, feel free to give us a call at 800-222-5222. Again, we are here live. Also, I want to throw it out there. I sometimes forget to throw it out there. I'm with the Veterans Law Group, as you hear at the beginning of the show. If you want to reach out to us directly, if you don't want to talk about your claim live on the air, our website is veteranslaw.com. That's veterans with an S. Our number is 888-811-0523. We work with veterans all across the country, but we are based in Southern California, and our office hours are from 8 to 4. We've got a great team of people who scan, or, you know, who do the initial consultations, and happy to answer your questions, even if it's not a case that we'd ultimately take on. You're welcome to contact us there. All right. Well, we did a big overview of the PACT Act. When we get back, I'm going to kind of shift gears and talk about a few other things that's going on in the veteran world, some advice I can give you on processing your claims. So this is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We'll be right back after this break. Good evening. Welcome back. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. I am a veteran advocate and attorney at the Veterans Law Group, the managing attorney here. And I get the joy of being able to be with you all live on Tuesday evenings from 7 to 8 o'clock and answering your questions about VA disability claims, having conversations about kind of what's affecting veterans in their community. Sometimes we do have a guest on who is maybe supporting a nonprofit or founder of a nonprofit. Got a few of those coming up. But what I generally like to do is just meet the need that you have, that our listeners have, is, you know, what kind of questions can I answer about your VA benefits or your family member's VA disability claim? So we're live here this evening, 800-222-5222. And let's go to Ron in Duarte. Ron, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Amanda. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I have a brother-in-law who has cognitive decline. He's 68. I believe he was in Vietnam. And it's getting pretty pronounced after about a year of showing signs of it, because we've witnessed it in other family members that have since passed. So it was obvious, and now the MRI that the VA just did has shown, I think I'll call it a shrinking brain, because I don't know how else to describe what I heard them talking about. But okay, at this point, we really believe that he needs in-home health care just to remember to eat and just to remember to take vitamins and just to remember to do the basic shit and stuff, sorry. And I just wanted to know if you had a direction you could send me in to get this ball rolling, because as of right now, they're still waiting for the final reading of the MRI reports from the doctor, even though he gave an initial comment that that was it. And the fact that he needs in-home health care now, it doesn't change because the report hasn't been read yet. So I'm wondering if you knew anybody, any organization that could help us initiate this.
Yeah, what I would do is I would reach out to your local county veteran service office. So every county in the state of California has a veteran service office. The reason why I like going to county veteran service officers on claims, I'm going to say claims, but issues like this, is because they not only know what you can file with the VA to maybe get some help and support, they're going to know resources in your area in the community there that are, you know, maybe it's not something that the VA specifically is going to help out, but they could have a nonprofit that might be able to help out, or a, you know, there's a lot of veterans' homes and that kind of thing. So, I would just, if you have a pen, the easiest way for me to get it is to go to NACVSO.org. It's National Association.
NACVS.
NACVSO.org. It stands for National Association of Veteran Service Officers. And while you can probably just go to your county service office, if they are listed on the register there for the National Association, I'm familiar with their education requirements to be accredited through them. So you're going to get probably the best ones that are listed there. So you can go on there, you can find a VSO, and you can put in your state, your county, and it'll give you names of people who are accredited through them.
All right. Thank you so much, Amanda. That's going to help a lot. I appreciate your help.
You're welcome, and feel free to call back anytime if I can be of any further help.
I'm going to give your number to my wife, and if she needs to contact you, I'll tell her Tuesday at 7 p.m. Or I wrote down the number of your offices as well. So,
yeah, if you call our office number, anybody who answers the phone is going to be able to help point you in the right direction. Or, like you said, she can call me on Tuesday evenings.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a great night.
You're welcome, Ron. Thank you. Yeah, those are definitely watching a family member go through that stuff. I've been experienced that as well over last year. It can be really frustrating. And then I didn't have it on top of it as being something that was related to service. That's the part of, you know, everybody who knows me personally and knows how I handle cases, I have a really big heart for Vietnam veterans. I have a big heart for incarcerated veterans and for those who've experienced military sexual trauma. With the Vietnam veterans, the thing that tugs at my heart a lot is, first of all, many of them were drafted. They didn't sign up for this. They didn't request it. And then when it came to Agent Orange, it ended up being something that we did to our own soldiers, you know, where the burn pits, they were put in that environment, but we effectively did that with the Agent Orange. So, you know, and I also know that when many of them Vietnam veterans came home, because it was such a controversial war, I've heard over and over again that they were just told not to tell anybody, they didn't come home to a hero's welcome like so many do now, when we have a lot more respect at this point in time. But so I have a huge heart for those Vietnam veterans. And, you know, the other thing that, Ron, if you're still listening, that I forgot to mention when you're on the phone is, if he has, the VA is going to treat things differently when it's something that they consider to be part of service than something that is not part of service. I won't get into the nuances of that, but if it's related to his service, and the first thing I think of when I think of some sort of, dementia or Alzheimer's or something, that can be a product of a TBI, a traumatic brain injury. It can, you know, turn into that. That's something that's pretty well known. And in the Vietnam era, that, you know, TBI wasn't something that we even really knew what it was or what it was about. And so that could have happened if he was, I had a client, it was this exact same scenario. We ended up getting him service connected at 100% for his PTSD. But meanwhile, he started developing dementia, and we were talking with his wife, and turned out that he had been in a rollover Jeep accident when he was in Vietnam, and was knocked unconscious and was unconscious for quite a period of time. So we continued to pursue that, because even though he was already at the 100% rating, if we can show that he had a TBI that is creating dementia and he ultimately ended up passes from that, then his wife isn't entitled to some benefits. So spouses can be entitled to benefits if under many conditions, but one of the conditions is if the veteran dies from something that is service connected. So when you talk with the veteran service officer, Ron, definitely ask about that. If it's something that he may have had some sort of head injury while he was not necessarily just in Vietnam, but while he was in the service. So it doesn't have to be that you were, you know, overseas, or, you know, it could be a training accident. It could be, honestly, well, you're under contract with the VA or with the military, they own you. So even if it's a car accident that you get in on your own off duty, that can certainly qualify for something as well. But again, good luck, and feel free to call us back if you have a question. Let's go to Max in San Diego. Max, are you still with us?
Yes. I think that in the future, you mentioned that, the burn pits are basically what, the vets were dealing with in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. I think TBI is going to be the next greatest thing that they're going to have to eventually acknowledge. They're doing it slightly, but it's not something they really want to delve into, because their options are very limited as what they can do, even though they've characterized it as, you know, moderate, medium, light, and severe. I think it's going to play its hand out a little bit more in the future. But that's not my question. My question is, future.
I'm going to agree with you. I want to agree with you on that really quickly, because I think that there's going to unfold more and more residuals of a brain injury. Like, you know, right now we do acknowledge a little bit of like change of smell or taste or that kind of thing. I think there's going to be more and more that roll out over the years. But back to you.
Right, and there's so much personality or mental health issues for the people who serve in the military, whether they get exposed to something, whether they fall, trip and fall and strike their heads, or jump out of airplanes like I did when I was a paratrooper in the 82nd. Mm-hmm. So it's a difficult situation. But I wanted to ask you about something you mentioned about a month ago, which was something about a collaboration or with the VA and the U.S. Postal Service, and that if you haven't received any correspondence to the VA because it was delayed or got canceled out, or there was some kind of mishap on the VA's part trying to use the U.S. Postal Service to deliver those, decisions, if you will, or they got delayed, mm-hmm. and maybe you got pushed out of being able to file an appeal.
Right.
You might have a second shot at filing an appeal if you didn't actually receive a packet. And the reason I ask is because I was at, I had a case before the Court of Veterans Appeals in Washington. Mm-hmm. Not the board, the next tier up, as you know. And I don't ever remember receiving that packet. And even though my attorney told me that he was not going to be in a position to want to, he and his firm are not going to go to the next level, which was the federal circuit. Mm-hmm. I don't ever recall receiving that packet. I think most of the stuff that I learned was online, so or through him directly. So I was just wondering, if I know the outcome of a particular decision from that entity, that body, and yet I didn't receive something official, am I still able to file an appeal in the future? That's my question.
Well, the answer is going to be no on that, because you're at the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. So if you are, the Court of Appeals is not required to send something to you individually as the veteran. They are required to send it to whoever your representative is that is listed on the website, and it's all done via email these days. So when a decision came down in the Court of Appeals, your representative would have gotten an email about that decision. You don't separately, the court is not required separately to send you also a copy. And that's because it's at the Court of Appeals. Anything below that, the board or the VA, they're responsible for sending it both to the veteran and the representative. But it's not the same thing at this Court of Appeals. And unfortunately, from the Court of Appeals to the Federal Circuit, you only have about 60 days to file an appeal within the Federal Circuit.
Right. So a quick question on top of that would be, with all of this PAC information that's just developing, and you have an onslaught of so many other claims that are going to be filed or appeals, we have a lot of guys out there that have already filed claims, but they never got acknowledged by the VA because they were ahead of their time or was bad timing. What does it do to the current pool of people who are trying to get a decision from the board? Is that going to, are they going to be pushed aside, or are they going to, case-by-case basis, you get in line like everybody else, or are they going to take precedent over the people who have been waiting in line?
But I don't have a direct answer from the VA about that. I can just speak to that based upon my experience of dealing with the VA over all of these years. The VA is notorious for doing what I call shifting resources to cover whatever is the latest outcry to the public, because, you know, a veteran's issue is something that everybody's going to get behind and be like, why are veterans being treated this way? So you'll hear in the news about like the backlog. This is what happened when I first started working with the VA. It was, there was this huge backlog of initial claims, and a lot of it had to do with some new presumptives and all of that kind of thing. And so a huge backlog. And so that was what was in the public, was veterans are waiting 6 months to a year to 2 years to get a decision from the VA. And what they were talking about at that time was initial claims. So they shifted resources out of the appeals. People who were processing appeals had them on mandatory overtime to be processing initial claims, and they were able to drop that backlog. If I remember correctly, the numbers were like 400,000 down to like 175, down to, you know, it got even lower than that. Well, meanwhile, the appeals department got way backed up. So it was like you could get an initial claim filed and receive a decision relatively quickly. But if you didn't like that decision, or you got denied and you were trying to appeal it, those appeals then become way backlogged. And so then appeals were taking 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get through. And so, like, I know with the recent presumptives for, not presumptives, but the change in the Blue Water veterans, the entire Los Angeles regional office, that was their job, was to file and process those claims. So I don't know how the VA is going to handle this, if they're going to dedicate certain areas to be doing it, or if they're going to be hiring more people. I already know that they're on mandatory overtime right now anyway. So it just depends on what they end up doing as far as managing this. But again, this is not the first thing, you know, this isn't the first time they've heard about it today. So they should have been prepping. I'm already looking at a website that's all about the PACT Act and what you should do. And this is all on the VA website. So they've definitely been prepping for it. But as to what's going to happen, time will tell.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that I've been waiting 2.5 years, and I've been at the board, and I don't know how long this is going to take.
That's not uncommon.
That means nothing.
Absolutely. You and many others. So we're going up against a break, but thank you so much, Max, for calling. And if you listen in afterwards, I want to address what you talked about with the mail issues, because if somebody's unfamiliar with that, I want to make sure they know. We'll be right back. This is Amanda Minier with the Veterans Voice. Welcome back. This is Amanda Minier with the Veterans Voice. We are taking your calls this evening. We've been talking a little bit about the new PACT Act that got passed today by the Senate. It's already passed the House, so all it needs is a signature or a few signatures, Biden's in particular, and then it's going to go live. The VA is already accepting claims and has a whole thing up on their website about it. So it's not a shocking, it's not a new thing, but it is pretty huge. Probably one of the biggest changes that I've seen in specifically substantive law of the VA, definitely since I've done this, but probably even longer. One thing I wanted to address before we went to the break, I was talking with Max out of San Diego, and before addressing his particular question about his case that was at the Court of Appeals and he never got that decision, he did talk a little bit about some known mail issues that have gone on over the years with the VA. And most recently, if you have a claim that's pending, you probably would have received a letter probably in about March or April from the VA that acknowledged that they had a mail problem, from an outgoing mail problem from July until December of last year. So it took them till March or April to let people know about it. But they actually let us know as representatives. We knew about it in about October, November. But what they were saying is it wasn't that mail wasn't ever going out and people were not getting stuff. It's that they were getting it 60 days, sometimes more than 60 days after it was originally dated. So because of that, when that mail goes out, if it's something that requires your response within 60 to 90 days, a lot of letters coming from the VA say we need an answer back within 30 days. It doesn't mean if you don't submit it after that 30 days, as long as they haven't made a decision, they won't consider it. So it's just they're trying to put a little pressure on you to get back, which, you know, I find it funny. They can take a year to send you that letter, but then once you get that letter, you're supposed to respond within 30 days. So what they did is anything that was dated from July of 2021 to December 31st of 2021, if you received a letter and it had a required response, you were given an additional 90 days, I believe it was, to go ahead and submit whatever they were asking for. So that's one of the times in which they have addressed it publicly that there was a mail issue. But separate from that, I will tell you that we have been dealing with mail issues with the VA going back to about 2014, 2015, where the VA would, you know, issue a decision. We never received it. Veteran never received it. But there's a concept in law that's called the presumption of regularity. And so it says, well, unless you can show circumstances in which the mail was irregular at that time. So, for example, you know, if you're able to show that you were in Houston and it was during the hurricanes and some mail got destroyed, you know, those kind of things, that's meaning irregular mail delivery. But otherwise, they presume regular mail delivery. So one of the things that we work with an organization called NOVA, National Organization of Veteran Advocates, we are a member of them, as are many VA attorneys. And we were talking about this all together, about the frustration of not knowing that a decision was issued. Now there's a lot of updated changes where they'll electronically notify you. Like, you can go onto va.gov, sign into your account as a veteran, and you can see that a decision has been issued. But back then, you couldn't. You couldn't, and that's only been relatively recently, the last couple of years. So you would never know if your case was pending anymore or if it had been closed out. So we've done things where the, you know, executive director of NOVA, she signed an affidavit that we file in a lot in these cases where we find out that something was supposedly supposed to be mailed out to a veteran and they never got it. And the problem with that is that then you miss an appeal deadline and then you lose back pay and then you lose, you know, and there's no recourse for that. It's the only area of law I've ever worked in where I couldn't revive a case by filing a penalty fee or something. I used to work in intellectual property, and that's all you really had to do. You just paid a fee, you got the case revived, and you moved on. Or you request an extension because, you know, it was miscalendared or something like that. As much as the VA is supposed to be veteran friendly, they don't give a lot of grace to things like missing a deadline on an appeal. So anyway, to know that, like, even if your mail issue was prior to this last 2021, there are some things that can be done about it. We've had success in some cases and not in others. It seems to be, we generally have to take it up to the board, and it tends to be, depends upon what judge it ends up in front of. So we're always willing to make the argument. So if you have one of those cases where, you know, you found out years later about a decision that was issued, we can certainly, you know, talk about helping you. So, we've got a few minutes left here. If you want to give us a call at 800-222-5222, we'd be happy to take your call. Other than that, I will give out, because I did before and I often forget to, that if you are interested in talking about your claim, with the VA, again, we only work in appeals. But that just means that if you get a decision that you're happy about, you don't need us. But if you do need us, or you decide that you would like to talk with somebody in my office, we do free initial consultations. The best way to go about that is go to our website, veteranslaw.com. That's veterans with an S. You'll see a button that says, see if we can help you, and it'll walk you through some questionnaires where you will be able to give us the amount of information that we need to kind of do a pre-screen on you. And then one of my team members will call you and talk in more depth about your case to see if it's something that we can help you with. We work only on contingency. That means that if we win, if you win, we win. And if you don't, if we're not able to get you a positive decision on your case, then we don't get paid. We cover all outside expenses, including independent medical exams. So we are very picky about what cases we take. For one, because we want to know we can be successful. We want to know that we can stand behind every single case that we have accepted and decided to take. We are going to do out-of-pocket money to get you what you need. But if we take you on as a client, it's because we believe in your case and we believe that we can get you your maximum benefit with the earliest effective date. So if you're interested in that, our phone number, if that's easier for you, is 888-811-0523. One of the things I recently took over as the managing attorney, well, I've been the managing attorney for a while, but I recently took over making the decisions on what cases we take and what cases we don't take. And there are certainly times in which we're just at capacity and we can't really take on any new cases. I've done quite a bit of hiring lately to make that work. But the interesting part about that in reviewing decisions is I started taking cases, or I'll start taking cases when I can see that there's going to be a shift in the law. And I'm like, oh, well, I know we can help this veteran. And again, as I mentioned earlier, I have a particular heart for Vietnam veterans. I have a particular heart for military sexual trauma cases. And incarcerated veterans. Incarcerated veterans are often what I call the forgotten veterans. Even though they are incarcerated, they are still entitled to the things that they worked for and sacrificed for our country. And that has some nuances in it as far as being able to communicate with a veteran, but also to get them proper exams and that kind of thing. So again, we'd be happy to look at your case. Thank you for joining us this evening. We will be back next Tuesday. We are here every Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 o'clock. This is Amanda Manier with the Veterans Voice. We'll see you next week.